Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Today is the day we finally do it, something we've been talking about for months.
Boom, 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 boom.
The Pod Awakens.
Oh, wait, wait.
The episode where we talk about...
Wait, wait. Before you say what we're talking about...
Okay.
I mean, I think we all know what we're talking about. I just got back from seeing the seventh film in a series that started in the mid-70s that has shifted its focus from a white lead to a young black lead. And although recent films in the series have kind of tarnished the series a little bit, I think we could all agree that we all loved Creed. It was such a great seventh film in the series, now about a black man that has recovered from recent film tarnishings.
I've referred to Creed as Episode 7 this whole time, right?
I haven't made that connection until today. I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, it's the seventh film. Yeah. They're now talking about a young black man. Like, it's the parallels are there.
It's definitely there. I read a review from Alan Sepinwall on HitFix.com where his whole review is all about the parallels of Creed and Force Awakens. I know. Sepinwall's on it, man.
Okay. Take it back then.
So, man, I haven't even asked you up to this point if you liked or didn't like this movie. I really wanted to save it for the pod. I know that you're a huge Captain Phasma fan, and we were both surprised that this is essentially a Captain Phasma story. This is her. It's just really her
origin
story.
We get to know about Captain Phasma the entire film.
I should make one remark quickly, though. This is going to be the most spoilery review possible. We will spoil every single thing in this film. So that this is consider this the warning. If you were, you know, under the impression this would be a non-spoiler review, you were wrong. I did record 10 minutes of my non-spoilery thoughts last night after my first time seeing it. And so go listen to that if you want. But if you've seen it, great. Stick around. I just got out of seeing it for the second time, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready to talk about it. Spoiler alert, Captain Phasma is barely in this movie.
Dude, is she in this movie?
I don't think she is. I don't think Gwendolyn Christie was on set for a single day.
Yeah, it was crazy.
What's great is, like, I was under the impression with all the hype that Captain Phasma was going to play this large role. So I was disappointed because it wasn't, for me, it wasn't feminist enough.
Right.
That's how I was approaching this film, was based on what everyone was telling me about how awesome Captain Phasma was. And really, it's almost anti-feminist because, like, ultimately she just kind of gets stuck, like, in this room and she just kind of does what she's told.
Dude, like, she were you as surprised as me? Like, she didn't put up any fight at all. She didn't try and alert anybody. She didn't try and fight back. She wasn't ready to die for the base.
No.
She was like, it's funny that she was calling him a traitor when she was just like acquiescing immediately. Like, she didn't put up any, she's like, you're Phil anyways, like, you just took down the shield. Like, that's as big of a betrayal as possible.
Like, this whole project, all of it came down to her just completely withering under pressure. It doesn't help. So, I mean, I'm unimpressed with the Captain Phasma usage. From what we understand from Kathleen Kennedy and J.J. Abrams, she's definitely in the future films.
Right.
And so I imagine we'll get a lot more of her. But she was also a part of the one of the things actually I didn't like about The Force Awakens. There was just a couple of fan service-y references that I would have, like, maybe preferred that weren't included, and she happens to be part of one of them, which was the question that Han asks about, is there a trash compactor? Wink,
he looked
wink.
At the camera, right? He, like, just looked at the camera and then smiled.
Yeah, he looked directly in the lens.
He's like, hey,
yeah.
Do you see that?
Yeah.
Trash compactor?
Hey, did you guys hear that? Remember the first one, 1977, we were in the trash compactor. I was wearing a stormtrooper costume. I'm very forgiving when it comes to fan service stuff. Like, I usually eat it up, but that to me, I was like, okay, rein it in.
Oh, that was very heavy-handed by JJ.
But I am surprised I'm starting on a negative note. Let's get back to the question: was this movie good? Did you enjoy The Force Awakens? Did it meet your expectations?
I thought this was, like, as a standalone movie, it was good. But as a piece of this franchise, and I think as the beginning of this new trilogy, I think it was perfect. Like,
yeah,
it set things up really well. Like, it did a lot of what episode 4 did, and it did it in a unique enough way. Like, it wasn't just episode 4 part 2 like I thought it might be. Like, it did have its own thing. And
oh, okay. I probably disagree with you there, but continue.
Okay. Well, I thought it did its own thing well enough, and I'm very excited to see where episode 8, like, this is the kind of thing where in 30 years, people are going to put, like, they're going to turn off this digital copy, and then they're going to instantly go put on episode 8. And, like, they'll be like, man, I'm so glad I didn't have to live in the time where they had to wait between these. Like, it'll just be, like, I think this will hold up well. I think it's a great start to a new trilogy. We got to introduce a lot of new characters that are very... I think they're going to be well-developed, and we'll, like, learn about them more. We have some good bad guys. I have some general issues with some things that I guess we just have to take on. This is how it is. Like, this is the universe we're living in. This idea of the First Order being exactly like the Empire, like, the aesthetics are 100% the same. It's just like a...
Well, it's a piece of the Empire, right? I mean, it's still... I mean...
Yeah, but, like, okay, and then why... If there's a Republic, then why is the Republic and the Resistance not one? Like, why there would need to be the separate resistance against it, and why the Republic wouldn't try and squash it? Like, this could all be things that have been answered. But it just seems...
So, yeah, I think... I think you're right to an extent here. They... In terms of the state of the galaxy here, we get like a little bit in the opening crawl, but they kind of give hints throughout the film about kind of what's been going on for 30 years. But they didn't paint the picture quite as like clearly or as full as I would have hoped. And part of that is due to, I mean, from what I understand, the Resistance is a group sanctioned and totally approved by the Republic to fight against this First Order, which I think at one point from... I'm imagining was really just kind of more of like a nuisance more than anything. And so they have this resistance to kind of keep them at bay, keep the First Order at bay, but they end up growing to be quite a bit larger and stronger than they realized. And so the Resistance is essentially the SEAL Team 6 of the Republic or something, right? That's kind of how I viewed it. But my questions are, well, what was going on with the Republic, and did Coruscant blow up? Because
in a very casual way. Like, we just watched Coruscant blow up, and...
Coruscant's kind of a significant planet to have blown up and not know for sure if it was Coruscant.
Like, well, it was the capital of the Republic.
Which I'm assuming is still Coruscant, but do we
don't
know that?
I mean, they just blew it up, and you know what? As an audience, I don't think we were really supposed to care that much. Like, it was just kind of...
They didn't...
J.J. Abrams has no problem with killing... millions of people, though. Like, I mean, the way Star Trek Edge of Darkness ended.
Oh, sure.
With, like, destroying the city of San Francisco. It's just kind of like...
Yeah.
As long as the characters you care about are okay, then you don't really care about the collateral damage that happens. Which...
Well, of course, on... I mean, it's a planet full of politicians, right? So it's kind of like, meh.
Sounds like a good start, if you ask me, right?
Well, I love the reaction of the people on the planet. They look up in this bright red light, and they're just like... Well, son of a...
How close are all those planets that they could, like, see up in the sky, like, it was as far away as, like, our moon is, essentially. Like, they could see all those planets that just got destroyed. Like, I want to see a map of the system. Because it seems...
Well, especially when they said, like... Well, I don't know. I guess Takadana, the planet with Maz Kanata's castle, like, I guess that was in the same system. I mean, I guess they're really lucky they didn't... That wasn't one of them, because that... The planet that they were all on was definitely really close to the planets that blew up. So,
like, really, really close.
Yeah. No, it's a good point.
And that laser beam has the magical ability of, like, it has, like, heat-seeking principles that can go after 5 different planets.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, one of them diverted. Like, one of the beams changed its mind. It was like, nah, I'm going to go to this one. I'm just going to... Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, like, although I just feel like in 4, when we saw a planet get destroyed... There was, like, some emotional, like, we go to Obi-Wan, who's all, oh, there's been a disturbance in the Force. Like, he can feel the death. Yeah. And, like, I feel like as the audience, we feel a loss. Even though they didn't actually show us the planet right before it blew up, which I feel like could have given us more sense of the loss. But, I mean, I didn't really feel too bad for all those people. I was just like, oh, you're...
I didn't either. It was like, oh, crap, yeah, that's pretty crazy. Hopefully they don't actually turn that on the people we care about, right? When in reality, we should have cared about those people. But, they didn't give us the context.
And how do they just... So they just go from... That planet can move? Like the planet with the super Death Star, what is it called?
Yeah, it's the Hosnian system.
Mm-hmm. Well, sorry, but what's that actual, what's the base called?
Oh, Starkiller
Base? Starkiller Base. So, does it have the capacity to move?
I don't think it does.
So then where is it getting all these stars from that it's pulling the power from? Because...
The sun, you
the
mean?
The sun's, like, because it takes all the energy from the sun, and it leaves the sun dead.
Because
the light goes out.
I wasn't under... Was this, like, a one-time use sun? Because I guess I was under the impression this was, like, a rechargeable, like, Duracell sun, right? Like, I thought...
My understanding of how suns or stars work is that if you took all the energy from it, and it's dark now, like, where it was, like, at the end, it's just dark, that doesn't really recharge.
Well... I guess everything I know about suns kind of got thrown out the window in A New Hope when Luke looks out and there's like multiple suns on Tatooine. I think the whole galaxy far, far away applies to everything we know about suns in our solar system doesn't apply here.
They can explain it away with it being a movable base that can go from star to star.
Yeah, but it's a planet, right? So I mean, they're not moving a planet.
Well, right. You know?
They're not moving a planet, but I feel like I've probably digressed here a little bit because I do want to rewind a little bit, give you some of my thoughts. I'm gonna jump into my favorite things first, right? And then I'll get into some quibbles and some things that I have.
Okay.
But I agree with you. In the Star Wars universe, this is as good of a Star Wars film as we could have asked for. I mean, it really was as good as we could have asked for, which is not a perfect film, but an incredibly entertaining, fun, exciting, thrilling, funny movie. Like, I was delighted the entire movie. And what few quibbles I had was they were very easily forgotten or squashed by loving everything else. Now, the second time viewing for me was better than the first, and that's because the first time it almost felt like a weird dream. And I was almost starstruck with Han Solo on screen. And the whole time I was just like, oh my gosh, that's Han Solo. That's Han Solo. Right. That's Han. And that's Chewbacca. And then I'm like so distracted that I find myself asking, whoa, what are these like weird creatures with tentacles that are attacking everyone? Wait, what? Like I almost like completely blocked out the context of explaining what those things were, you know? And then like I just wasn't listening. It was like so hard for me to take in everything. So the second time around, I actually got quite a bit more out of it. But this movie opens up with the line, and I know people have been making jokes about it, but I really do think this is what J.J. Abrams is saying. But the first line is given by Max von Sydow, and he plays this character, Lor San Tekka, who's giving the piece of the map to Poe Dameron.
What do we know about him,
Poe Dameron?
What do we know about his character?
Very little. Very little. In all of the books, Journey to the Force Awakens books that have been released, we have very little context on Lor San Tekka. Clearly, he knows Kylo Ren is Ben, and that he is Han and Leia's son, and he's some family connection or friend or something. I think we're going to learn more about his backstory.
Okay.
In either supplementary materials or maybe future film references. But the very first line of the film is the sentence, "This will begin to make things right." And that's as he's handing over, like, the piece of the map. But, like let's be honest. This is J.J. Abrams saying, like, this is about to make things – this will begin to make things right for a fan base that got burned badly by three terrible films. And so, like, he's saying it straight up, like, this, don't worry. Like, this is going to make things right. And the question is, does it by the end of the film? And I think it's a resounding yes. Like, the feeling I had more than anything coming out of this movie was like a feeling, I would say safety, that like this franchise is in the hands of good storytellers, of people who care about these this story, this universe, these characters, and we're gonna have some really, really good movies to come. And and it left off at a point that I feel like episode 8 will likely be better than episode 7.
Right.
It sets the stage perfectly. Let's talk about our new characters. Because I think this is a huge strength of the film, and this is something that could have easily derailed everything. But when we're talking about Finn, just the good guys alone, Finn, Rey, and Poe, I mean, these are some strong characters to work with. This is a strong foundation. I think Daisy Ridley, who I was a little bit nervous about coming in because I'd heard of, you know, even from her own accounts that she was very, very stiff in her acting. And Peter Mayhew, who plays Chewbacca, was saying some of the same things. And this is really her first, like, real movie. I wondered if how good she was going to be. I thought she did terrific.
She was great.
I thought she was really, really good.
Yeah.
I knew John Boyega was a good actor, but I wondered how, like, if I would like his character. Finn was awesome. Yeah, he's comic relief, but I feel like, I mean, there's some serious heart to his character. I definitely cared. I hope and I assume that he's going to be with Chewbacca now. Like, he's just going to kind of fill that role as Chewbacca's sidekick or vice versa, whatever.
Right.
I don't know if that's the case, but that's the sense I get.
Yeah.
And then Poe Dameron is my favorite character in the whole movie.
Within 3 minutes, we knew a lot about him. And
yes.
I wanted more of him. Like, I could have dealed with a lot more Poe.
Yes. We were underserved Poe because there was the whole mystery of did he die in that crash back on Jakku.
I mean, if you watched any trailer, though,
see him.
Like, that's the problem with trailers.
Well, of course. Well, I mean, we knew that he wasn't going to. But that was the, at least in the world of the movie, it was where is Poe? Did he live? And then we really don't see him for a long time. I mean, it's like probably 45 minutes even. I mean, it was like a long time.
Right.
And then his entrance back in was one of my favorite parts of the movie. One of the, like, the hairs kind of stand up on the back of my neck and I get goosebumps. And that was seeing the X-Wings come across the water on Tokodana and just start taking out stormtroopers.
That was excellent.
Dude, that whole sequence, I was so pumped. Anyway, so the new character is really great. Kylo Ren is going to be that character. I think is probably going to be the most divisive of the new ones. I thought actually Adam Driver did pretty good for being a conflicted, not totally evil all the way through bad guy. That can come across as wimpy, but I thought he did a good job. Yeah.
I mean, I don't like him as a person. I think for some reason, I'm not really sure why I don't like Adam Driver, but. I think he did fine with the character. Like, he was a little on the, I don't know, it felt kind of shaky at times.
Yeah.
And
well, there were a couple of times where his voice sounded like he was doing like a Javier Bardem impression.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I wasn't sure. I was like, what is going on? What's this kind of weird accent? And then it went away. But let's get to the goods, because this movie was Han Solo's farewell tour. Harrison Ford brought Han Solo back in a way that I like in my best case scenario wasn't even this good. Like, I knew he was going to die in this movie. I knew there was no way we were going to finish The Force Awakens with Han Solo alive. But what I didn't think was that, like, I was okay with that. I was resigned to that fact. But, like, once he's back on screen, it was like, oh crap, man. Like, this is too good. Like, Now I really don't want you to die. Like, although I think his death scene was one that was done really well, and it was a fitting, like, proper death scene.
Right.
But what was your feelings?
The
door opens up and in walks in Harrison Ford.
That was great, and like having him and Chewbacca on screen was great. Having him interact with Leia was great. Like, I thought the problem might have been that he stole every scene he was in. Like. He kind of
his
gravitas overshadowed Finn and Rey. Like, and I think that's why 8 has a great amount of potential to be better than this movie. Because as much as I loved having him in it, like, I think it will be better without him, if that makes sense. Like, I think having the story move past the legacy characters and kind of move more towards these characters that we don't like, these new characters and everywhere that's going to go, I think that has the potential to be a more compelling story. Like, I think it'll be better storytelling because this just had to kind of mesh these two, this period from 30 years ago and now. And they did a really good job of that, but at the same time, like, there's just so many questions that we don't have any clue on. Time of Luke training these Jedis, who the other Jedis were. There's so many questions that are left unanswered, which is fine, like, it's not that, like, I need to know the answer to every question. It's just it left me wanting more, which is good. Like, I want more in this episode 8, and I'm okay with that being with less legacy characters. Like, I'm okay with them having more Poe, having more Phasma, having more
Yeah.
Kylo Ren, having more of Rey, and
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about Donal.
Want more? Do you want more General Hux?
He's my favorite. He's my favorite, and that's why I wanted so much from him.
We
And I
love
don't
Donal.
feel like
This is a
the scene where he was
Donal-friendly
playing Adolf
podcast.
Hitler. It was a Hitler impression, right?
Yeah.
Like, and then to have all the soldiers give him the Hail Hitler at the
Yeah.
end.
It's a good Hitler impression.
It felt that was like a big wink
Yeah.
at the audience
Yeah.
too. Like, it was like, okay, we get it. He's being
Yeah, I
Hitler.
thought that was along the nose. This is now. I don't actually don't think this was any fault of Donald. I think he did just fine with what he was given. I think he was given a one-dimensional character, and I think he hit a double, maybe a single, but like he got on base with it. I think it was okay. But like this was not going to be some sort of layered character. Like, I mean, anything that was layered at all that could have gone into his character, that all went to Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren was just like the definition of like conflicted, had multiple things. Like, no, with General Hux, that was a one note, one beat character.
I'm a little confused by how powerful he is within the First Order.
Yeah.
Like,
Yeah. Which, yeah, and this ties into a bit greater question of what to think of Snoke as well in this in the whole hierarchy of what's going on.
right.
Because he's not a Sith, and we know that he likes to be projected very large, but we don't know if he's actually very large in real life.
Oh, that scene where for like a minute I was there thinking that
Yeah.
he was that tall.
Yeah.
I was so bummed.
Yeah. Well, I was yeah, I was too, because I was like, well, how is this gonna work when there's like the climactic scene in this trilogy where they have to fight him? Because then it's gonna be like the end of Dude, Where's My Car? You know, it should be giants walking around. I don't know if you remember that Ashton Kutcher classic, but it
Oh,
ended
I
with
do.
giants.
And like just I did not need him to be 15 or like 50 feet tall. So
Yeah, no, me
when it turned
neither.
out as a projection, I felt much better.
Yeah. I
But
wonder how he set that up. Was he like, okay, guys, I need you to project me enormous whenever you're showing me to Hux and Kylo Ren. Like, I don't want this life-size crap. Like,
although like
make me huge.
he's worked with Kylo before, right? Like,
Yeah, he essentially seduced Kylo to the dark side. And Kylo, for all intents and purposes, is his Padawan, right? And that's why the movie ends with Snoke, you know, telling Hux, bring Kylo back. I need to finish his training, like, to go fully to the dark side.
right.
So, yeah. He definitely knows Kylo. So I don't know why he's trying to trick him. I don't know why he's trying to trick him with his size. I wanted Kylo to be like, look, we all know like you're like a solid 6'2", which is tall, but like, I mean, you don't have to do this whole 50-foot projection thing.
Right. So is Donald the head of the entire, is he the lead general?
I think he's the super. Yeah, I do.
So then why was he like off on this one ship doing like this somewhat, I just, how
That
big is the
ship,
First Order?
that's it. It's that ship and that planet.
That's
The First
it?
Order is small. The First Order is small.
Then how do they have a planet 10 times bigger than the Death Star and they're that small? Like, who's running this?
Yeah, well,
Who's funding
Hux.
this?
Hux.
And how did
Well,
somebody so young get in control? Like,
I mean,
he's
I
like
don't doubt
30.
Snoke's ability to seduce like Wall Street money, right? Like Snoke's getting the money, right?
Where was Snoke's in the last trilogy? Or in the first trilogy?
Where was he?
Yeah.
That's a great question. Probably in the Outer Rim. That'll be my guess.
Yeah.
Somewhere, yeah, because he's not Sith. So I don't know.
By the
It's a really good
way,
question.
that's one thing I'm loving is that we're not having to deal with all these, which will probably come back in the next movie, but we don't have to deal with all the Jedis don't feel, Jedis don't love, Jedis are blah, like I enjoyed seeing people have like a passionate fight,
Yeah,
like
yeah.
lightsaber fight. Even though I have issues with why Kylo Ren didn't kick both their butts, like as a
Yeah.
trained someone who's using
Yeah.
the Force and
That's
has
why
a
I think, yeah, I agree, right? But I think Kylo Ren's not as strong or as capable as he thinks he is. Like, I actually don't think he's that good at lightsaber fights. Like, I think he's good at twirling it. But, like, if you can defeat Rey with his lightsaber, when Rey literally turned on a lightsaber for the very first time in her life, like,
right.
I don't think Kylo's actually very good. I think that's part of this being a very different type of bad guy is that he's not as skilled as we're used to just having these baddies that are just like unbelievably skilled. I don't think he's one of them.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like I'm willing to see where it goes, but
let's, speaking of lightsaber fights, man, how was that moment where Rey uses the Force to bring Luke's saber into her hands? That was like the pinnacle, right? Like that was the moment.
That was fantastic. That was, yes,
so good. And the song comes in on cue. I'm like pumped out of my mind. I'm gonna be honest though. I did have a few times, and I mentioned this in the non-spoilery stuff, that there were a couple moments where my eyes actually immediately would well up. It was like an automatic reaction that I had almost no control over. And the first time that happened was early on when Han Solo first boards the Millennium Falcon and Finn and Rey are just kind of peppering him with questions. And they asked him like, yo, did you know Luke Skywalker? And he stops and turns around. He's got this kind of half smile smirk on his face. And he says in his eyes, like Harrison Ford does such a good job of acting. And he says, yeah, like I knew him. Like, I knew him. And boom, my eyes were like, boom. Like, I'm just recalling all of the nostalgia and everything. And it totally worked on me. I mean, I'm going to sucker for it, but, like, it totally worked.
I'm bummed we don't get to see him interact with Luke again.
I know. That's the one bummer about having him die before seeing Luke,
Although, maybe Luke wouldn't want to see him because he kind of screwed up his son a little bit and turned him into a bad guy.
That's true. I wonder what the relationship's like, right?
Yeah, because I'm sure we're going to have Luke that's now riddled with guilt.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just mentioned how you're glad you didn't have the whole Jedi, like all the talk about how Jedis don't feel. Yeah. Well, we're at like the Jedi temple now, which is where we're going to pick right off. Like, we're going to pick up right where we left off in episode 8. And I think we're going to get a whole lot of that. Jedis don't do this. Jedis don't do that. So I hope you have 2 years to mentally prepare for that. So
yeah, that's true.
I love that they kept Luke Skywalker till the very last shot of the film. I love that he didn't say a word. I thought that was perfect. That's the whole leaving me wanting more. We had too many people to cover, too many people to introduce and to satisfy. We had Han Solo's farewell tour. You know, we'll get a lot of Luke in the next couple movies, and so I'm really happy they saved him.
I thought they did a good job of taking a huge story and keeping it small. Like,
yeah,
we didn't go to a ton of different planets. We didn't go anywhere where our main characters weren't there with us. Like,
right.
It was a big story. Excuse me. I'm dying over here. It was a big story, but like they kept it relatively small. And I thought that was impressive. And like, I thought they did a better job of that than like, if you look at J.J. Abrams' Star Trek movies, I thought that they kept this a tighter story than those movies are. I thought that it was just a really well-told narrative. A little easy. Like, it didn't really feel earned at the end, I guess, when they destroyed the whole planet. Like,
yeah. That I wanted to talk about that, right? Because
it might be nostalgia, but I feel like there was just plans being laid out for so long to take down the Death Star, and then to take down the second Death Star. Whereas this felt like kind of dumb luck, and the fact that I don't know when Poe just went in and just shot everything, and then it just collapsed on itself. That also felt just like super undeserved, like unearned. Like it just
So I had the same feeling, actually, the exact same feeling. The first time I saw it, I thought, well, that's weird. Like, that really went down quite easily. And I got mixed. That was like one of the more negative takeaways I had was like the destroying of the planet definitely felt like not very like momentous or very difficult. Now watching it the second time, I kind of see what happened and why I felt that way. Because in A New Hope, we have that. I mean, that's the pinnacle. You have X-Wing pilots going down. We have one shot. We've got Luke Skywalker's the last one that's able to do it. And then you got the countdown going, like, and they're like, they're pulling the levers and it's about to fire and destroy, you know. But Luke, our hero from Tatooine, fires the torpedoes in and kaboom, right? That's the main emphasis. In this one, we're dealing with two scenes that are being cut back and forth. One of them is Poe going through doing the trench run, right? And then just picking off one by one each little thing that he has to blow up for the planet to go down. But the emphasis is no longer put on that. The emphasis is put on the lightsaber fight with Kylo and Rey.
Which we were told that there were 2 minutes to go before they're ready to fire. And then we go to the lightsaber battle, which... Right. I need to go see it again and take like my watch and clock it. That was easily 10 minutes, right? 5 to 10 minutes.
Feels like it. Yeah.
There's no way it was under 120 seconds.
Yeah. It's just, you can explain it this way. It's just a flashback. It just went back.
Okay. Because it doesn't seem like it did that, but...
No, it didn't. No, it didn't.
I mean, like, they didn't need to have the whole line of, it's 2 minutes. Like, they just didn't need that.
Yeah, right, yeah. Or just put it later, when it was, like, actually 2 minutes. I don't know. But, yeah, so, like, there's less than emphasis. So, I think in our minds, because I thought this was nearly beat for beat A New Hope, that when we get to that point, we're so used to that being the thing. And really, it wasn't. It was like, yeah, we need to destroy the planet, but the thing is Rey and Kylo Ren having this just crazy lightsaber fight, which I thought was actually pretty awesome, and I really, really dug. But yeah, it definitely went down fairly easy.
It was a lightsaber fight with a lot of flesh wounds.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of getting nicked.
Yes.
And not hurting too bad.
And some blood.
Oh, by the way, who is the bearded guy who is in the Resistance that, like, seems super familiar? Who's that guy?
Yeah, so, good question. I don't recall his name at the time. He's been in a bunch of little small stuff. He's been in almost all of J.J. Abrams' movie. He's J.J. Abrams' childhood friend, elementary school friend. And from what I understand, he like begged, you know, to be like he. I think they said they saw Star Wars together in theater for the first time together, like as kids, right? So he's like J.J. Abrams' childhood friend, but he's been an actor in supporting roles in several different things, and so of course J.J. throws his buddy a bone and gets him in. You want to know who else J.J. threw a bone to?
Yeah,
Daniel Craig, James Bond.
He was one of the stormtroopers.
Do you know which one he was? We now know.
No.
He was the stormtrooper that Rey pulls the Jedi mind trick on. That's Daniel Craig.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I need to see this movie again.
Yep, Daniel Craig.
A lot of comedy in that scene. Lots of comedy.
It was really good. Drop the gun, you know, or drop your weapon on your way out. Oh, so good. I really liked Rey starting to discover the Force. I really liked Kylo's comment about, like, the longer she's, you know, got like out, the more powerful she's going to become, like as she realizes, you know, like she has the Force, but not as strong as she realizes or knows. Like I thought that was a really cool wrinkle. I mean, she seemed to take to it quite a bit faster than Luke did. I mean, it took Luke all the way to that cave on Hoth till he could finally pull the lightsaber out, you know, out of the snow. She picked it up quite a bit faster.
Oh yeah. Like she was there right away.
All right, we ready to talk about the MVP? Because BB-8.
So cute. Ben Schwartz did a good job.
Oh, yeah. Ben Schwartz and Bill Hader?
Yeah, they killed it.
I love that they were the voice consultants for BB-8. Like, what? Like, yeah.
Because he was so different than R2-D2 that they really needed the voice consultants.
Yeah, right. BB-8, I mean... There's several moments that I think it was perfect. I think what helped humanize BB-8 was that when Rey's character, when Rey comes across BB-8, she immediately treats it like it's a living organism, like it's a living being. Like, oh yeah, you know, she cuts him free and she's like, yeah, that guy doesn't care about anyone, you know. And she's like, all right, the town's that way, avoid the quicksand, you'll get, you know, swallowed up, blah blah blah, you know, peace, right? Like she talks to it like it's a living organism, and I think that's what helps a lot in the way we perceive BB-8. I mean, he gives a thumbs up in this movie, so which was among my favorite scenes.
He had so many dog-like qualities, like just loyalty and
funny. When he sees that Poe lived and it like races over to him and Poe gets down and treats it like it's a puppy, like BB-8's right. A little puppy.
Poe loves that BB-8.
So, really, really great. I mean, BB-8 was, like, better than I could have hoped for, even, right? We joked about how, like, people were already BB-8 crazy and we had knew nothing about this droid. Well, like, it was all really earned. Like, was terrific. So, great, really great job on that. I did love C-3PO's intro. I thought that was hilarious and it was perfect.
He was very C-3PO.
But I will say one of the negatives in this movie is... R2 having the map the whole time, like,
and just not waking up because plot.
Why did he only wake up then? Because plot.
because BB-8 was really cute. Because
it was like, oh, I what? Like. Is it because the
was that when the Force Awakened
on First Order?
Yeah, it's when the and they like had this map that just had like that little part missing, but they were so sure that they'd never seen that sector of the galaxy. But like, if they'd just seen the rest of the map at some point, they would have known like it's that sector.
Well, that's the second half of why it was a negative for me, because when he projects it and you see how small the piece completes, you know, like the empty pieces, it's like, oh guys, couldn't R2 have already shown you this and been like, oh yeah, I'm familiar with all this stuff. Less familiar with that part, but I know exactly how to get there now because it's the only thing missing on the map. It was kind of – that was really weird. I wonder if C-3PO is to blame here because, you know, earlier in the movie he says, oh, it's very unlikely R2 has a map in his system. Like, don't even try. It turns out he did have the map in his system, and maybe 3PO talked everyone out of even trying.
3PO's an idiot.
Yeah, so dumb. He really set the resistance back a ways, and Luke's been on that island for a long time thanks to 3PO, so –
yeah, although maybe there's an argument to be made that maybe things are better with Luke gone.
Yeah, maybe 3PO thought this was his moment to shine.
Right, he just wanted to take it.
Yeah, I mean, finally. I was so eager to see Luke Skywalker that, like, I was willing to overlook it. But on the second time, it's even more glaring that it's like, really? There wasn't a better way we could have written in how the map got completed. Like, there's a lot of things they could have done. I thought that was a little lazy, but, you know. Whatever. They're busy getting Daniel Craig fitted for a Stormtrooper costume.
You prioritize.
Yeah. Dude, I love the sequence with, by the way, of Finn and Poe when they take the TIE fighter. The back and forth through that whole thing, I thought was like...
great chemistry. Oscar Isaac. Yeah. Like, he was so on Oscar Isaac. Like, I mean, it felt a lot like his Ex Machina character. Like,
oh, yeah.
Very funny.
Or the charisma. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like, immediately when he's, like, sitting there, so are you going to talk first or am I going to talk first?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Wonderful.
So good. Oh, so good. Like, when he gets out there with the TIE fighter, he's like, oh, man, this thing can really move. You know, like, you could just, like, the excitement of being a pilot and being in, like, the enemy ship that you've destroyed so many of, but you've never actually flown. It was awesome. But, yeah, his back and forth with John Boyega was awesome. And so I actually look forward to – I hope there's a lot of them together because that definitely worked.
Really good stuff. For sure.
I felt like – I mean, I'm excited. JJ's mentioned that there's maybe 10 to 20 minutes of, like, deleted scenes that will probably be on the Blu-ray and DVD release. I want to know where those are because there's one sequence I feel – to me feels cut. Like, I feel like more happened there, and that's at Maz Kanata's castle.
Oh, for sure. It does feel like we missed a lot.
Yeah. And I loved it. I mean, I loved the one shot of the door opening and then you get a pan of the room and you get the, you know, this is where J.J. Abrams' insistence on using practical effects where possible pays off. It looks so good.
Well, that, like, everything. Okay, so if you think about the big sets we get to see. So it's the battle at the castle. Like, once the castle is destroyed, all that feels very real. It's... Yeah. Like, just there's so many things that have these levels of reality because we're actually looking at the set. And, like, when they're at the resistance, like, field, the air strip or whatever,
with the X-Wings,
like, all those things are actually there. Like, it's nice that when they used CGI, it seems very limited. Like, the scene on the planet when they're, like, lining up everything to destroy in there, obviously that was all very CGI. But, like, besides that, like... You felt like you were on sets, which I like. Like, I like being able to tell I'm on a set as opposed to The Hobbit, where you can just feel like you're... There's nothing that takes you back to reality. It all feels fake.
It's too fake, right.
Which, well, did you get the trailer for The Gods of Egypt?
Oh, yeah.
That looks like the worst movie ever, and it's going to be a huge disaster. And whoever greenlit that thing really needs to come talk to me, because I can tell you before, like... If you just showed me the front page of that, I would say, no, don't make that.
Or how about this? Just this one line. Gerard Butler in a movie called Gods of Egypt. Like, are you in or are you out? And I'm out. Because can you name the last good Gerard Butler movie?
We're all out. And then tell me that it's all CGI. Like, it's 100% CGI.
Yeah, no.
And
no thanks.
We're going to have these characters who are, like, 10 feet tall. And it's going to be that one blonde guy from Game of Thrones. Like, no. That's going to be such a financial failure. They put so much money into that, and they're not getting any of it back.
The only thing they've been getting publicity for is the fact that everyone in it is white. Been like a huge controversy.
That's the only way they could have made it less bankable, by putting anybody who actually looked Middle Eastern or Egyptian in it.
Yeah, not a popular time to cast people who look like that.
They could have put, they could put Admiral Akbar in there. He would have added a little bit of POC.
I want really bad Donald Trump to come out and just be like a huge proponent of Gods of Egypt. Like huge. Like, this movie's it's great.
Huge. This is my kind of movie. It's huge. Huge. By the way, Trump, I'm just going to go ahead and share my whole thing on Trump right now. Trump is a liberal. Like, Trump is
a Democrat. No, yeah. Yes.
This is all one great bit. Oh, yeah. And he has figured out that there's this huge market inefficiency in people who are idiots.
Yes.
Who just hate everything that's like PC. They hate anything that the media says. So every time Trump pisses off the media, they get more and more like stronger and stronger. And it will be the most amazing thing ever. Like, I don't want to get too political on this podcast, because I'm sure half our listeners are registered Republicans, which is fine. Yeah. But if by some miracle Trump actually gets the nomination, which I'd put it like 1 in 3 odds at this point. Like,
no, stop.
Dude, I'm serious. Like, he's poll at
numbers aren't the same as votes.
He's at 38%, and he has people.
Poll numbers are not.
He's
the same
got people
as votes.
Excited. I mean, like, I know that like the odds are, unfortunately, that Rubio's get the nomination, or in a more scarier world,
Cruz.
That Cruz gets the nomination. Oof. But like, I'm pretty sure Rubio would beat Clinton. I think Cruz and Clinton would be a toss up.
Wait, I'm sorry. You think Rubio would? Did you say beat Clinton?
Absolutely.
Oh,
he's young. He's young. What I can't figure out is why he doesn't have more vote. Like, why does he not have a bigger percentage of the Republican Party right now? He's young. He's attractive. He's from Florida, swing state. He's Hispanic. Like, there's a lot of things that would make him so compelling to Republican voters that I cannot figure out why he doesn't have more.
Do you really
support
think
right
him
now.
Being Hispanic is something that the Republican voters are like excited about?
No, but it's going to be something that helps them in the general election.
Well, yeah, I agree, but I don't think that the Republican voters necessarily view it that
way.
No,
but that's why he's a better candidate. Like, the thing the Republican voters are doing right now is not finding somebody who's going to help them win the election.
Sure.
They're being idiotic. Like, I can't figure out for the heck of the life
of
me.
Count me among the people who has fully bought in on the conspiracy theory that Hillary Clinton is in cahoots with Donald Trump and put him up to this, that this is an actual Clinton plan. I absolutely believe that.
I heard that on the Bill Simmons podcast yesterday, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm all in on that. Are you talking about Jacko? Jacko's theory I'm all in on.
Dude, I feel so bad for people like him who are like,
I know.
Cause
he's very level-headed.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, he's conservative. He's smart. He obviously wants, you know, he has ideas for what's best for this country. And Jacko just wants a good Republican candidate. And you can tell he's so frustrated because this crop of candidates is so terrible.
It's really impressive. Like, it's just like where things will end up. I think Rubio will get the nomination and then they'll have a really good shot at winning the election. I think if Cruz gets the nomination, it's like 30% chance. But if Trump gets the nomination, it's a 0% chance.
And so I think no one's stopping Hillary Clinton. I think that train left the station a long time ago. And
Bernie has no hope.
Yeah, unfortunately, no. But
and today did not help.
There's a I think the Clinton political machine is too strong. I think she's going to wipe out any Republican candidate. And so I think it's a done deal. It's hard for me to even really care.
No, dude. She's not very popular. Like, I don't think she'll bring out the voters like Obama did. And I think that Rubio will. Like, I think she'll have some serious issues against him. And I think
Cruz.
You have
more faith in the Republican base than I do.
I think if Cruz gets enough people, like, super excited, I don't know. Like, I'm worried about Cruz because I think he'd be a far worse president. But
I think I would rather have Donald Trump as a president than Cruz just for good SNL bits alone. Right? Like, just for SNL bits alone.
We do all understand that he's completely and totally 100% unelectable, though, in a general election.
Yeah, of course.
It'd be so amazing if he won.
Yeah. Now, Cruz is like Professor Snape. Like, it's like, you know, like, there's like, oh, man, I've got a feeling he's, like, been plotting something evil for a long time. But honestly,
this
for me, I'm going
to
go for whoever.
For.
What's that?
This is what people come to the podcast for. I want to vote for J.J. Abrams.
I apologize to everyone who had to go through like 40 minutes of us talking Star Wars. Be like, come on, get to the Cruz talk.
We need our Trump talk. By the way, John Boyega, He's got like a wide body. Like his hips and legs are wide.
Oh yeah.
He looks super strange in a stormtrooper costume.
Nope, does not fit him well. When the first shot of him, when you realize you knew what stormtrooper he was, like by the guy that was acting all like confused and didn't want to shoot, I'm thinking, oh, you're a little wide for a stormtrooper. And I was hoping there was going to be a line in the movie, like Princess Leia being like, aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper? Like, I really wanted someone to be like, aren't you a little wide for a stormtrooper? I think that was like a good opportunity. Didn't happen.
Yeah. But, and then what? My last complaint, like, I loved this movie. I feel like I've been complaining a lot, but I love this movie. But the, like, the lightsaber thing that the stormtrooper had.
Yeah.
What was that?
I think that's the the version of the Empire, the First Order, finally getting smart about lightsabers, because up until that point, whoever had a lightsaber would just own stormtroopers forever. So they probably got their own little lightsaber crystals and built their own little anti-lightsaber mechanisms. And
but, like, what does that guy do if there's no Jedi, or not even Jedi, but people with lightsabers at battles? Like, he just walks around and then hopes that somebody has one.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were, well, I guess at that point, Maz Kanata's castle, they wouldn't have known that that one had a lightsaber. Yeah, I think he's the one dude that's like just the just-in-case anti-lightsaber weapon guy. So when he saw someone, when he saw Finn tear at the lightsaber, the dude, I imagine he was pumped. He's like, finally, I can use
years
this thing.
Years and years of training.
Years of having this. No, that's a good point. Can we talk about the Millennium Falcon intro?
That was pretty great.
It was pretty great. The whole sequence of the Millennium Falcon flying, going back and forth, and Rey dropping the Millennium Falcon, and just so Finn could line up the shot and shoot that last TIE fighter, and then her pulling the lever.
What is the Millennium Falcon made out of, though, now? Like, it seems like it's indestructible.
Yeah.
It can, like, crash into anything and be just fine.
Yep. Well, I mean, Chewbacca's constantly working on it, so he's fixing every time it hits something, it's something else Chewbacca's going to have to fix.
It just seems so impressive, though. I mean, like...
Yeah. Well, it's a hunk of junk. It's like, I view the Millennium Falcon like I would view a 1968 Chevy Camaro, right? Like, it's made of metal. Like, a Camaro's made of metal, where today we're made of plastic, and our cars just, like, in any crash, they just crunch, you know? We're, like, in the 60s and the 70s, like, these cars are, like, nearly indestructible. Like, I mean, my dad had a 74 Camaro growing up, and a deer broadsided us once, just driving randomly through Sacramento. A deer comes out of the road. And it just completely obliterates the poor deer, right? And the car was like 100% fine because it's just completely made of metal. So I think Millennium Falcon's like that. It's a hunk of junk, but it's an indestructible hunk of junk.
Right.
Were those TIE fighters? Very disposable.
Is that really the only Star Destroyer they have? Like,
yeah.
Now all they have is one Star Destroyer.
That's like, it. This is a very small faction of the Empire. This is the thing that's lived. It's been growing. I think they have that huge Star Destroyer and they had that base. And then that's it.
That seems like they wouldn't be very powerful then.
Like, well, they weren't. Now. They weren't very powerful, right? We took it down pretty quickly, right? I mean, like, I'm a member of the Resistance. They took down the planet really quickly. I mean, I really think that they're a small faction. I think they're growing, right? Like, that's the whole thing. So.
Those TIE fighter pilots have terrible aim, too. I feel like Poe could have been shot down 100 times. Like, we had kind of the whole heroes can't get shot thing at the castle.
Yes. Yes. Well, Poe's the best. He's the best pilot in the galaxy. I mean.
Right. No, I mean, like, but I'm talking about, like, the castle scene where they're just standing around pretty much unprotected with stormtroopers everywhere, not getting shot at all.
That's true. Like, well, I mean, Chewbacca got shot.
Chewbacca did get shot, but.
He got shot. Yeah.
But it was kind of like a flesh wound situation where he was just fine.
Yeah, he was just fine. Chewbacca had some
with
of
the nurse.
Yeah, yeah. No, Chewbacca had some of the best parts of the whole movie. Like in terms of comedy, was it Finn like turns in when they first meet Han Solo and he's like, wasn't he like a war hero? And Chewbacca just kind of shrugs like, like, I don't
that,
know.
That there were a lot of great Chewbacca, like he killed it.
That nurse, like you mentioned, you must've been so brave or whatever she says. And he's like, yeah, you know, it was great Chewbacca stuff.
For every scene he had, although he did not seem super sad about losing his BFF.
No, he went on a rampage. He took out every stormtrooper right after that. He was
pissed.
But
then he's just flirting with a nurse like an hour later.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's still Chewbacca, right? I mean, if you got an opportunity, go for it, you know?
Game,
I don't think Chewbacca's getting a lot of game, you know what I'm saying?
Dude, I get it. I get it then.
Like, Han would have done the same thing, right? Like, he isn't, you know?
I don't know. I feel like Han would have been in years of mourning if he would have lost Chewie.
Well, I agree, actually. I think that would have affected Han a lot more, a lot worse than it affected Chewbacca. But Chewbacca's going to have a new Han, and I think that's why, you know, I think that's Finn.
Yeah.
Now, There were several Easter eggs in this movie, like throughout, obviously references like, you know, can't the Millennium Falcon, didn't that make the Kessel Run in 14 parsecs? And he's like, it was 12, like 14, you know. But I don't know if you caught this. I caught it on the first go around, and I was pretty sure I saw what I saw. And then the second go around, I was confident. But there's this quick cut of Finn rummaging through things. He's looking for something in the Millennium Falcon, and he pulls out the orb from A New Hope that Luke Skywalker used to do the we had the blaster shield down on his face, over his eyes, and he had his lightsaber, and Obi-Wan Kenobi was telling him to, essentially train with the Force and use the lightsaber to block the little things. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, I saw that scene. Like a second, but it was a second. That's a nice callback.
So you noticed it?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah. All right. It wasn't.
You had totally that. Crazy. You had the set from. How do you call it in English? Chess. Like the
chess.
Space, yeah, chess. Yeah. Right. A lot of nice little callbacks.
There were quite a few callbacks. I got a bad feeling about this.
I thought there was a good level of fan service. And I think that's something we won't see in 8. Like, I think a lot of the fan service will go away and it'll just be storytelling, which I think will be to its advantage.
No, I think this is shaping up to very much. I think 8 will very much be the Empire Strikes Back of this trilogy in terms of, like, it's going to move the story forward. I think it'll definitely be a little darker. And I think Rian Johnson is going to be personally way less interested in fan service than J.J. Abrams was. And that's okay.
He just wants to tell a story.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And then for 9, we'll have Colin Trevorrow and dinosaurs. I can't wait for
Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt's going to be so good in 9.
Oh, he's going to be so good.
He's going to play Rey's dad.
Oh,
which,
no.
Do you think Luke's
wait, no, hold on. That's the question we have to ask here. Rey's dad is Luke Skywalker.
Why are we also sure about that? Like, I've
because
heard
they
from...
they basically tell her that. Like, Miles Kanata basically tells her that. She's like, the lightsaber was calling to you, and she's like, that was Luke's father, and it was Luke's, and now it's calling to you, and it was just like a very clear lineage drawn out there. And yeah, Luke Skywalker gives her at the end, the fact that she's obviously very Force sensitive and she's not connected to Han or Leia, she's not direct offspring of them. Even though they tried to deceive us by having her and Han like finish each other's sentences about the pilot stuff, like that was kind of a misdirect. Until we find out Kylo Ren, of course, is their kid. But no, that's Luke Skywalker's daughter. Now the question is who's the mother?
And how did Leia not recognize her niece?
Well, she was really young, I think, when she was left there. I mean, you saw the flashback.
And how do they leave a kid there like that, like in a terrible situation? Like, at least with Uncle Ben or Uncle Owen, like you have Uncle Owen and you have Ben who's there watching. Like, yeah. I feel like there was nothing like that in this situation.
I think Lor San Tekka was that. I think that Max von Sydow's character was doing that.
That was okay. Well, then, yeah, I just
it kinda... Let it sink in. It makes sense, man.
I all felt kind of weird, like that she really she was living by herself, right? Like, was she living at that AT-AT?
Yeah, that's her home. That AT-AT was her home, or AT-AT, whichever you prefer.
Don't say AT-AT.
I would never. It's not that. I've heard people saying that recently.
Sarah Koenig
cringe.
Is the worst.
Sarah Koenig doesn't know what the heck she's talking about. I haven't listened to this Serial
what
episode
a fake
2.
Nerd.
But she should not. She has no business saying AT-AT. Come on,
fake nerd.
Ridiculous. So I don't even want to listen anymore because he told me she said AT-AT instead of AT-AT.
Dude, this season's been so good. I hate Serial. It's just so good.
Oh, I know. And the whole Bowie Bergdahl story is something I was following fairly closely anyway, so it's like right in my wheelhouse. I'm pretty excited. But I want to mention a couple of things here. Nate Farr goes on Twitter after he sees Force Awakens and just goes ahead and says, you know, I grew up with the original trilogy and Episode 7 is better than all of them.
That's not true.
Yeah. Like I told him, I tweeted back at him like, whoa, that's, whoa, like check impossible. Yourself, check yourself. Like, you know, easy. And then Brian Mortensen, he puts, he says Empire is his favorite. Empire Strikes Back. You know, that's a fairly popular opinion, even though I personally feel like A New Hope is the best. He puts Empire Strikes Back number one, Force Awakens number two, then Return of the Jedi, and then A New Hope. And so putting Return of the Jedi ahead of A New Hope to me is like unforgivable.
But on that list, he'd actually put Good Dinosaur number two, right?
Yeah, and Monsters U would be number one, right? And then a Good Dinosaur.
Have you seen Monsters U, though? I mean, it takes all those fun things and just makes it funnier.
Yeah, like, who wouldn't want original characters and ideas put into the most unoriginal scenario imaginable?
Sorry, B-Mart.
We love you, B-Mart. I'm still grateful you came on the pod.
He's not. He didn't make it past the politics.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't make it past. But B-Mart honestly was a part of my very favorite episode we've done. So, still grateful to him for doing that. Even though he fought a losing battle, no one likes a good dinosaur, and
we just need to have a full Monsters U, a commentary episode where all of us are sitting there watching Monsters U together.
He
tells us why it's a good movie.
I want to walk through every scene and have him tell us why. That's how he ranks the Star Wars movies, which is to me shocking. You and I are very self-aware that recency bias affects our opinion very much. So I wouldn't currently put Force Awakens above any of the original trilogies, but I do think it is in the same caliber of quality. I think that it's obviously way better than the prequels. I would even put it above the Star Wars Christmas special.
I would say it's right there with Clone Wars.
Attack of the Clones?
I should say that. No, I mean, it's right there with Clone Wars, the cartoon series.
Oh, cartoon series. Right, well, yeah, that's beloved. Yeah.
Right. The Ewoks were missing.
No, I think it's right up there. And maybe over time, maybe I put it ahead of Return of the Jedi. Maybe. But, like, right now it's not. But I love this movie. I loved it. It was hilarious. It was so fun.
It needs time to age, though. Like, we need to see how it ages. Yeah.
No, you're exactly right.
That's the thing about those original trilogies. It's had 30 years to age, and it's aged beautifully.
We
love it, so.
I worried a little bit going in. I would have a Kingdom of the Crystal Skull experience, which was, I love Indiana Jones so much that I was so excited to see Harrison Ford revive that character. And obviously that didn't go over very well at all. And so I did have my doubts.
Lucas.
I had my doubts that Harrison Ford wouldn't be able to bring it back for Han Solo. And I couldn't have been more pleased because Harrison Ford just brought his A game. And ultimately he's the star of the show. He steals every scene. He's the reason why you should go see this movie. Obviously everyone listening has seen the movie, but he's the reason. It's as good of a Star Wars film as you could have hoped for. And it really, in the Star Wars universe of movies, it's perfect. And so I'm pumped to see it a third time. I'm pumped to see it a fourth time. I really am going to see this many times in the theater.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. Box office.
Yes.
How much?
So
it broke the Thursday record, which is kind of unfair because we've only been doing the Thursday at 7 p.m. bit for a year.
It's not a great record to hold anyway. It's going to break the Jurassic World record of opening weekend, which is 210 or something.
It's like 207.
Oh, okay.
But it's going to break that.
Yeah, I think it'll get 220, 230.
Hoping for more.
I want 250, really.
I've seen the projection at 220. I'm hoping it heads north of 250. Like, I would love to see it hit 260, 270, just, blow everybody's minds.
Yeah, totally.
Because Disney's stock really took a beating today for some reason when the whole market went down. So I'd really like to see it just blow away this weekend.
You got some stock in Disney?
A lot of stock in Disney. That's a big part of my portfolio right now.
Oh, wow.
Disney rebounding.
Yeah, my portfolio is not diversified. Mine's all still in Apple.
20%. Down in a month and a half.
Not a good reason to.
I read an article today about how Apple's lost more money in the last couple months than PepsiCo's worth, or than Nike's worth. They've lost more money than 450 of the S&P 500 companies are actually worth.
Oh my gosh, it's ridiculous.
They've devalued $150 billion.
Well, that's my retirement fund. So,
thanks, Apple.
Thanks, Apple. Thanks.
Well, it's a good time to buy Apple right now.
Yeah, no, it's a good time to get in. Because, man, if they keep churning out those iPad Pros. Anyway.
Has that not gone well?
I don't know. Actually, I have no idea if it's gone over well. I go in the store, I pick up an iPad Pro, I can make fun of it all I want, and I'll probably still end up getting one at some point. So, I mean.
Yeah, give me second generation.
Yeah, maybe.
Why did they not give it the touch, the 3D touch?
Yeah, that's weird, huh? Are you saying – are you wondering why it wasn't incorporated in the iPad Pro?
Right. They have the technology.
Yeah. It's weird to me that they haven't put them in yet. It's come on, guys. Just put it in there. We know you can do it. Everything that they, announce on the new iPhones, they should just be putting it in the next iPads as well, and it's weird when they don't do that. But back to your question about box office, the real question here is, will it beat Avatar, right? That's the big question, because Avatar had legs that no one expected, and historically, obviously, no one's ever had. So will it beat that? There is a real question there, because I think it will beat every other record. But because of how good this movie's been, because of its rewatchability, that was the question, right? Like, we knew the opening record stuff, I thought it was just going to obliterate no matter what. But will it be rewatchable? And I think it's very rewatchable. I've seen it twice, and I want to see it again. So I think it's definitely going to have multiple viewings.
We got Christmas on Friday.
Yep. That's good.
Next weekend will be huge again. This is the same path that Avatar took.
Yep.
Except it's going to have, like, 5 times bigger opening weekend than Avatar had.
Yes, it will. So we needed to play good in China.
Well, it doesn't open in China until January.
Right. Where it ends up box office numbers, we need the Russians to come out in droves. We need them to go see this movie.
Well, so what did it did like 70 million Thursday. Well, because it opened in most places Thursday, like
right in
Thursday
Europe
morning.
Yeah.
So it did 72 million on Thursday. So if you combine Thursday night with Thursday night in America with Thursday day overseas, it's at 130 million already.
Yeah.
Which is just like already puts it in like top 5 movies of the year almost. Like, it's insane how quickly this movie, like, just to put that in perspective, the film Spy over its entire run only made 110 million worldwide.
Wow.
So like it's made a lot of money so far. Just kidding. That was domestic. It made 235 million, if anybody's gonna fact check me on that.
Oh really?
But I mean, it's already made more money than like all of Spike Lee's movies combined.
That's not a great, you know, that's not exactly the bar to
You're not gonna go see Chirac?
Nope. Spike Lee hasn't made a good movie. Spike Lee's made one good movie, so I mean,
it's got an 80 on Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm not gonna see Chirac.
It got an 80. What I can't understand about Chirac is it's got an 80 on Rotten Tomatoes and like a 78 on Metacritic, but a 5.6 on IMDb.
Do you think it's going to break Avatar's record, though? Do you think it's going to?
Yeah, I do. I think it's going to break every record.
I hope it does.
Biggest film of all time.
Well, because if not this, then what? Really?
Well, but the thing is, I think it will only hold the record for like 2 weeks.
Well,
I think Concussion's going to come out.
Oh my god! Do you really think Concussion's gonna? You really think? You tell the truth. Tell the truth. Sorry.
I think Will Smith's got that star power. Like, which, can we take a minute to talk about Independence Day trailer? Why? We don't need that movie.
What's your question?
We don't need the new Independence Day, right? Like, nobody's asking for that.
Oh my gosh! Not only do we not need it, we definitely don't need it without Will Smith. Like.
I mean,
why?
Like, I love Jeff Goldblum as much as anybody loves Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, so do I.
But Jeff Goldblum should not be making that movie.
No, it bums me out that he's not. I mean, like, come on. I wish you, like, stay on that Wes Anderson train, right? Just keep making those movies. Like, I don't need you in Independence Day 2. Although, you know, man's got to eat. Probably picked up a pretty good paycheck. But, you know, come on.
I don't want to see that movie. That Jurassic Park 2 paycheck's pretty good every day. Like, I bet he gets some pretty sweet zids on that.
Yeah, he probably does. The residuals have got to be enormous. Hey, dude, I was wondering, would you mind if I did a Kylo Ren impression?
Please, give me your best Kylo Ren. Give me his.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to do it right now. Okay,
the Independence Day 2 trailer.
Skyler, my name is Adam Driver, and I was on the HBO show Girls, and now I am a Jedi or a Sith or something.
Yeah, what are you?
That's all I got.
All right, that's it. How did I do? Was that good?
That's pretty good. Okay, so is it a mis- like why do not like why do no non-Jedis have lightsabers in the first 6 films?
Why don't they?
Right. Like, why are more people not using lightsabers?
Right, because it's not like a Jedi has a power that, you know, only they have the power to actually turn on a lightsaber, and it's not like it's the sword of the stone.
Cuz you
kind of
feel that way in the first 6 movies, right?
Like, certainly.
But in this movie, then all of a sudden, non-Jedis are holding lightsabers left and right, and
I think the crystals, the lightsaber crystals, are very rare And so I think, like, when the Jedi were destroyed, I don't think anyone really knew how to make them. And I think that Obi-Wan was holding on to, like, one of the really last lightsabers. Obviously, besides.
Are we to believe that Kylo did not design his own? That that's, like, an ancient lightsaber? And that's why it's so crappy?
No. I think it's modeled after an ancient design, but I think he very much made it himself.
Okay. And if you've seen the Clone Wars cartoon, there are a ton of those crystals around.
Oh, are they? See, I haven't watched Clone Wars cartoon. I watch Rebels. I skipped over Clone Wars. I watched one episode of Clone Wars, and I was a little bit over it, so I jumped right to Rebels, which I love. But Rebels is so good.
Very good. Okay. You want to sign off in our most...
Yeah, man. I think that's it. We got an hour of stuff in there. And seriously, I couldn't be more thrilled. J.J. Abrams deserves all the praise he could possibly get for this. And so, thank you, J.J.
Give your money. Give him all your money. Go see it a dozen times.
Yes.
Give Disney your money so Disney can give me a nice little kickback.
Yeah.
Let that stock go up a few dollars.
Yes. We got this. This episode has some brave little investments, they're building the Star Wars section of Disneyland, right? So yes, give them your money so they can keep building that. That'd be really great.
Right.
But yeah, may the Force be with you all. May the Force be with you. I think this might be our last episode before Christmas, so Merry Christmas to everybody.
Happy holidays, actually. Yeah,
if you don't celebrate Christmas, then you shouldn't be listening to this pod. No, I'm just kidding. That's a joke.
Actually, we take it back.
Merry Christmas.
Don't need everybody mad at us.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
I'm going to say Happy Hanukkah. I'm not going to mention Kwanzaa because I've never met a person in my life that celebrates it.
Hanukkah's over, and you've never met somebody that lives in Utah, so...
Dude, I grew up in California. Do you know how many Kwanzaa celebrators were in my elementary school? Okay, one. There was one. But that's it. Okay, but seriously, go see The Force Awakens.
I can't tell you that there's a very small percentage chance that anybody who listens to this podcast does celebrate Kwanzaa.
There's a 0% chance. I'm going to tell you right now. If you celebrate Kwanzaa and you're listening to this podcast, I want you to email us at bravelittlepodcast@gmail.com. Tweet us, bravelittlepod. Let us know. We're going to give you a $100 gift card to any of your Kwanzaa specialty stores that you shop at. Ooh. As an apology.
They got to prove it, though. They got to prove it.
You've got to prove it.
Pictures with them holding a sign that says, I love the Brave Little Podcast, and here I am celebrating Kwanzaa.
Yep.
And I need them to be with, like, other people celebrating Kwanzaa. I need, like, the full garb.
Yes.
The colors.
I want your favorite Kwanzaa tradition.
And then we'll think about giving you a $100 gift card. No promises. Yeah. Let's be very careful, dude. People are litigious.
I can't. Oh, well, come at me, bro.
Speaking of come at me, bro, that bro that's selling all the AIDS pharmaceuticals for super expensive guns.
Oh, my gosh. He literally said, SEC, come at me, bro, and they did.
They did, man. Sucks to suck.
Oh, man. Oh, the internet hates him.
Internet felt so validated today.
Yeah, they did. Oh, that's so great.
Well,
all right. Well, happy Kwanzaa, and as we say,
hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.